This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use, helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize, so you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365Copilot.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by HuntStand. HuntStand is the number one hunting app in the country, and at only $29.99, HuntStand offers a ton of functionality for hunters all over the country. Whether you own your own property or strictly hunt public, you can choose from over a dozen base maps, view property ownership information, 3D mapping, local weather, log your sightings and harvest, as well as use their trail cam management software, and print maps from your hunt areas. Download it today at the Apple App Store or Google Play. HuntStand. Upgrade your arsenal. Welcome to the How to Hunt Deer podcast. This podcast series was designed to educate those who are interested in becoming deer hunters. We cover a variety of topics that will help you become more confident and comfortable in the field while hunting deer. All right, everybody, welcome back to the How to Hunt Deer podcast. And today I am joined by a gentleman, Joe Birrell. Joe, how are we doing today?
Doing pretty well. How about yourself, Dan?
I can't complain, man. I'm tagged out in Iowa for the time being. I don't gun hunt, just archery hunt. And so I have to wait until shotgun season is over to determine whether or not I want to go out and try to hunt the late season in December and January this year.
Now, do you get more than one buck over there, or is it just one?
Well, in Iowa, basically you can get an archery buck and you can get a firearms buck. But in the late season, you can use what they call a primitive weapon. It's actually it's a late season muzzleloader tag. But what you can do is you can use your bow equipment. It can be a muzzle loader or anything that's considered primitive, and a compound bow falls into that category.
That'd be pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah. Where do you reside?
I live right outside of Indianapolis in a little town called Greenfield, Indiana.
Okay, all right. So you reached out to me and you said, hey, I finally, after several years, got my first ever archery, archery kill buck. And, I want to talk about that story. I want to talk about what you did different to lead into this season, but I also want to get a little bit of history. Because it sounds to me like you just picked archery back up in 2018, after a pretty long hiatus of bow hunting.
Yeah. So, my dad's always bow hunted. And probably 10th or 11th grade, 8th or 9th grade, my dad said, hey, how about we get you a bow and we start shooting? But I shot archery all through 4-H up to it. But he finally said, let's get you in a tree stand with a bow. I'm comfortable. You have the knowledge. But, at that age, I was probably 14 and You sit in a stand. I was calling way too much. I had it really got my itch started because I had this goofy rack 8-pointer that had one of the racks facing straight downward. It was literally right below my stand. I remember to this day, the reason the buck moved is because my tree stand was shaking so much.
So that was in your early days of when you first started bow hunting. Okay.
Yeah. And, I rifle hunted with my dad. I got my first buck, a little four corn. I was probably 10. So I got my, hunter safety permit at 7 and my dad let me hunt at 10. Actually funny story, especially if you ask him, we were out hunting. I was probably 8 or 9 and, I was supposed to wear glasses, but you know, it's not cool when you're in school to wear glasses. Kids don't wear glasses. And it's really foggy, misty morning. My dad goes, there's a buck right there, 15 yards from us. And I'm like, where? I can't see it because I don't have my glasses on. It's right at 30 minutes till sunrise. And my dad goes, that's a monster buck right there. And finally, after 5 or 10 minutes, the buck snorts and takes off. And I said, oh, there it is. And my dad said that was still to this day, biggest buck he's ever seen. And if he wasn't tagged out, that buck would have been home. But he always tagged out early in bow season so that we didn't have to worry about him hunting with us and spooking his bucks away.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the lesson there is now you wear glasses when you go hunting, right?
Well, it took a long time for me to finally wear glasses.
I gotcha. I gotcha. But did you continue gun hunting? I mean, it sounds like you've been a gun hunter for a long time then.
Well, in high school, you kind of start chasing something other than whitetails, and it piques your interest a little more. I met my wife, and we spent a lot of time together in high school, so I only got 1 or 2 weekends in the woods through high school.
Yeah.
And then you got college afterwards that I was working full-time going to college, and I didn't get a job that allowed me to hunt like I wanted until early 2017. And then I was really learning that job. So I didn't have the time I wanted to until 2018 when I started really, I was like, man, I can really focus on this.
Right. Okay. So 2018, so all these years go by, 2018, what was the trigger for you to all of a sudden get back into the woods, even whether it was, gun hunting or picking up a bow and starting to get efficient with your bow and arrow setup again? What was that trigger that you told yourself or that clicked on you that's like, hey, man, I got to start doing this more?
Well, I think it was when my dad, it was a couple years prior to that. But like I said, still was the job. But my dad shot his personal best buck ever. First time ever setting foot on this property. His buddy has heart issues and said, hey, I need someone to come hunt with me because my wife doesn't trust me in the woods alone. So my dad picked a spot on a fence row, sat down, and opening morning of firearms, this monster 12-point, I think it was actually 11, missing one on one side, 165-inch buck steps out at 40 yards, sniffing a doe's butt, and he was gun hunting because he hadn't practiced his bow in many years. He squeezed the trigger, just stood there, and he called me, and he was shaking. I could tell in his voice, and he goes, I just shot the biggest buck ever, and I met him at the taxidermist, and I looked at that buck, and I was like, that's something I want to chase.
Yeah.
I want to chase big deer.
And so, that was kind of your, an experience. Now that was your dad or your dad's buddy who shot that buck?
That was my dad.
Your
first
dad.
First day ever stepping on his buddy's family farm.
Okay. And so he shoots a really good deer and, you saw it and you're like, oh man, that kind of triggered you to get back at it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So throughout the years though, you know, in a conversation that we had before we started recording, you said that you had, and maybe these are as recent as 2018, but you mentioned that you had some obstacles to overcome, whether that was strategy or gear or whatever, that you needed to get past in order to be successful. What were those failures and how did you overcome them?
So, the first failure I had was I had the wrong bow. I traded for this new old stock Bowtech Stalker, and it was like a 2005-06 model, 29-inch draw. I'm a 27.5, so I got it set to 27.5 inches, but that 80% let off wasn't there. Yeah. It was probably 40% let off, and I could shoot good groups with it, but I just couldn't hold it back.
Yeah.
So, you know, it caused me not to be confident. So then I bought, Diamond Infinite Edge. I started practicing with that and I got really good out to 60 yards.
Yeah.
So, I found some public property, cause I didn't have any private property I could hunt at that point. And I scouted it real heavy, found a nice spot. It was actually 200 yards from the road, from the parking lot. And it looked like no one was hunting there because it was so close to the parking lot. People right. either tell you to go way deep in public property or you're not going to see deer.
Yeah. And I'm going to hold you. I'm going to hold you right there for a second, though, because you talk about gear, right? And I think yep. that's I had an experience like that even this summer. Where I had typically been shooting a 29 inch draw, and I go to a bow shop and I'm just testing out new bows. And he's like, all I got is a 30 or no, I was asking for a 29, and he watched my form and he's like, man, you actually need a 30 inch draw length. And so I got a 30 inch out and I started shooting it, and it actually felt more comfortable to me. So all my testing that I did, between the seasons was on a 30 inch draw length. And I got way more confident. And my accuracy was really improved, as opposed to shooting something that was a little short on me. And it sounds like that was kind of the same issue where you just weren't feeling 100% confident in that equipment.
Yeah. And I still wasn't with the Diamond Infinite Edge. You know, it's a decent beginner's bow. But not now, knowing what I know now, it's probably needed tuned properly.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like every fourth shot would just be a flyer. It would just go random places.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Do you think that was lack of practice? Do you think it was fatigue because of, you know, what you were saying about how it wasn't 85% let off? Like, what do you think some of those issues were?
I think it was, so I actually just set this bow up for my brother, because he needs to build up his strength, and I'm getting him into bow hunting. It was tuned for one. And then the second thing is the bus cables on that are so close to the fletching. You really have to have a small fletching. If you have the blazer vanes, they hit.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things, is it's the vanes hitting and it's the tune. And I got him grouping well. And I told him, hey, it's set at 45 pounds, turn it a half a turn until you get up to where you want to be.
Yeah. Okay. So as far as the equipment is concerned, going in, so now do you currently still have that diamond bow, or did you upgrade again?
I upgraded again pretty, actually it was probably 2019, later in 2019.
Okay.
I walked into a bow dealership after looking at several bows. I was looking at Matthews, Hoyt, Prime, Elite. And I walked in because this guy was an Elite dealer. And I said, man, I want this Elite. I've shot it. I really like it. And he pulled out a Prime bow for me. And he said, try this. He goes, I don't have any elites in stock because I don't sell them that often. He goes, try this. I'm wholeheartedly believe in Prime, and I tried a Prime CT3, and I fell in love with it. And I've even upgraded from there because, you know, you tell your wife, oh, I need a spare bow in case something happens to this one.
You shyster.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, man, I had a CT3 for years, and I absolutely loved that Prime CT3, great bow.
Yep, and I still have it on the shelf. I shot it this year still, but I upgraded to the Nexus last year. Well, yeah, December last year. And I love Prime bows. They're awesome bows.
Yeah. So now the gear problem is hopefully fixed, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So, and that's something that a new bow hunter specifically definitely needs to hear, because they are, you know, brand new, and they may not know, they may think it's comfortable, but unless you go to a pro shop or a bow shop and talk with a bow tech and have a specialist really, you know, feel you out and get the measurements right and tune the bow. It is night and day difference between just a regular bow that you pick up and something that's been tuned by a professional.
Yes. Yes, it is. And there's nothing wrong with going to Bass Pro and buying a bow, but yeah. I think you still need a professional to tune it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those guys are way too busy. Yeah. It's nothing to do with experience. I think a lot of those guys have good experience. They're just, they got to pump them out.
Yeah, that's a fact. All right. So the gear situation has kind of been handled at this point. Now, what about the change in strategy or saying to yourself, hey man, I just don't want to shoot a doe. I want to shoot a buck.
So, you know, that encounter was probably, that was probably still 2018 when I said I wanted to shoot a buck. And that was, you know, my first encounter as an adult with a buck and a bow was 2018 on that public land. And specifically because I scouted, it was probably October 31st, right around that area. I go out in the morning. I got work in the afternoon, midday, and I told myself, okay, if it doesn't happen by 10:30, I'm going to get out of the woods so I can go to my work. So at 10:15, I did a short calling sequence. I had a buck come out in front of me. Like I said, I'm pretty confident to 60 yards, and I had a Trophy Ridge React 5 pin sight, so I knew where all my pins were. I had ranged this tree, knew the buck was at 45 yards, put the pin right on him, shot him, waited about 45 minutes because I saw him run off, but I lost sight. So when I went, I found the arrow. It was, it had some pretty good blood.
And this was really, what year was this? 2018, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So the arrow had good blood. There was good blood on the ground. I said, okay, I'm going to go take my climber out. So I was still using a climber at this time. I hadn't upgraded the Lone Wolf. I think I have an Alpha now. And I took my climber out, walked it to the truck. So now we're hour 45 minutes into the hunt, or into where the deer, I shot the deer, and I'm starting to track. And when I'm at the truck, a DNR officer happened to drive up, and he goes, hey, have any luck? And I said, yeah, actually, I'm going back to track. So he goes, hop in the truck, I'll drive you back there, we'll go look together. So now I got four eyes instead of two. And we track this buck, and we're tracking it, moving real slow. And we get to the spot, and there's just blood everywhere. And he goes, man, this buck has to be close. And then we find nothing after it. Nothing. We never saw the buck jump, nothing. Well, at this point, I'm supposed to be at my appointment for work. I called him, told him, hey, I'm not coming today. I got something more important to do. So I called a dog out because I knew that's what I needed to do. The dog comes out, He goes, show me Last Blood. I showed him Last Blood. He goes, man, this is really good blood. We can, I mean, we saw bubbles in the blood. It was definitely a lung hit, at least one. And he goes, the dog's not tracking anymore. And the more and more we look at this spot, you can see where this deer laid down or whatever, from the trail, the main trail where everyone in this parking lot has to walk on the way back. And he goes, well, take me to First Blood. Took him to First Blood. His dog went all the way to the trail, came back to the same spot. And he goes, I'm telling you, this deer did not walk out of here. He goes, because there's scent glands in the deer's hooves. And if that deer walked, my dog would at least track a little further. He goes, the dog stops right here. This deer died right here. Well, 2 days later, I'm on a Facebook page, and I see my buck. And there's a guy grinning with my buck.
What?
Yeah.
So someone stole that buck out from underneath of you.
Yeah, because I remember to this day, he had more of a chocolate rack. And it was a little bit darker color fur than a standard buck. I mean, he was a mature buck, had a big white patch on the top of his head. Very unique buck. And it was probably 130-inch 10-point. I mean, nice buck.
Yeah.
And this public land was draw only for firearm season. And my neighbor happened to draw a firearm permit and invited me to come out with him. So, and this was kind of my neighbor's introduction to me getting to know each other, because he's about 75 and his daughters are getting a little leery that they don't want him to hunt alone anymore.
Yeah.
So,
well, hey, out of curiosity, did you confront this guy who potentially stole your deer, or was there a chance that he shot him too?
You know, there's always that chance, but the blood trail never got heavier.
Yeah.
It was always the same until there was the end spot.
Okay. Did you confront this guy?
I didn't, because what's it going to do over Facebook? DNR can't do anything. I talked to my dad about it after I saw the picture. I sent it to him, and we're both kind of hotheads. So that's, you know, your first reaction is to confront the guy. And my dad goes, there's nothing you can do. But I was pissed about it the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of racks your nerves, and you're like, what the heck?
Yeah.
So that kind of explains opening day of firearm season. On the same public property, I set up almost in the same spot just because I knew there were deer there. You know, you're kind of tiffed because your deer got stole. Well, the first deer that walked out was a four corn, and I hadn't got a buck probably since 2011 or 12.
Okay.
Actually, it was probably late. Let me think about this for a second. Last buck I shot was my small basket rack 8-point.
And that was with a firearm, right?
Yep. I was in 7th grade.
Okay.
So that would have been 2006.
Okay.
So it was 12 years since I lost my last shot of buck.
Okay.
You know, I kind of took all my anger out on it, but, you know, I was at the same point, I was like, you know, two bucks within a 2-week span of each other, it kind of started getting some wheels moving on what I wanted to do. And I was so perturbed about this whole thing. I honestly didn't hunt the rest of the season.
That's how fired up you were. So did you end up shooting a deer with your gun then?
Yeah, I shot that 4-point.
Okay, that little four corn. Okay, with the rifle. Well, and that's a win, right? I mean, you got a deer. And as hunters, we all kind of make adjustments throughout the throughout the season, whether we want to, you know, strictly hunt with a bow or, you know, hey, I tried with a bow. It didn't work out, whether it's your fault. Or in this instance, it sounds like it's not your fault. You had a crazy circumstance happen. that we were successful in that season. And then it sounds to me like emotions kind of played out the rest of the season, and you decided to hang it up the rest of the 2018 season then, right?
Yeah, kind of get a break, refresh.
Yeah.
I think that's the year I found the Hunting Public on Amazon, because I work from home a lot.
Yeah.
I like to say I worked from home before it was cool.
Yep.
So it kind of got me thinking about, you know, public land, different ways to hunt deer. And it really, you know, even though my big buck being stolen that year, it really made me realize that I had something going. I figured out a pattern.
Well, that's good. That's good.
We fast forward to 2019. My neighbor said, hey, you can hunt my private land with me. And then my dad's buddy, where he shot that big, big buck, Boone Crockett buck, said, hey, you can hunt my property for bow too. Well, I found out early, right before season, my wife had cancer.
Okay.
So it kind of put a damper on how much hunting I wanted to do that year. We were dealing with other things.
Right.
So my neighbor and I, we bow hunted quite a bit still, but I was really learning his property. It was 180 acres of just rolling hills with oaks everywhere, thickets everywhere. I really didn't figure out this property till 2020.
Okay. So 2019 kind of goes by. You have some family things that take precedence, and you're also on a brand new property that that not only did you hunt less, it's almost the opposite of what you need to do. If you pick up a new property, you need to hunt more or scout more. And you had the lack of time with family issues, and you also had a brand new property that you just couldn't put in the time to learn properly. And that kind of caused you to, I mean, did you strike out then in 2020?
Actually I didn't. Actually I'm talking about 2019.
Okay. So yeah,
I should say 2019.
Yeah.
I didn't, because we got drawn again. And the reason my neighbor was really looking for a partner is because he wants to hunt every state park before he can't hunt anymore.
Gotcha.
Which are draw only. And state parks are firearm only. So state parks are really fun because they're only hunted for 4 days a year. Rest of the year, they're sanctuaries. So we scouted heavy on the state park, and we bumped a buck and doe about 2 weeks before the beginning of season. I started looking around and I was like, man, there's a lot of sign here. I want to sit here. So I sat there not 20 minutes after the sun rose. And these are really management hunts. So they don't want you to pass up any does. And I was using my dad's old Mossberg 695 bolt action with a ported barrel, which really helps if you're going to shoot more than one deer. It scatters the sound so much they don't know which direction it came from, and they don't bolt. So about half hour, maybe even less, before sunrise, or before after sunrise, I have two does flow through, and one's definitely a mom, the other one's year and a half old deer or less. And I shot the big doe. I didn't see her go down. And I'm like, I'm going to wait here in my climber and wait for the big deers to come by, or I'll go track it here in a little bit. And I should mention there's good snow cover on the ground. I mean, it's one of the first years that there's good snow cover on the ground opening weekend of firearm. Well, about 10 minutes later, here comes that buck that I bumped up. And he comes through and steps right where I wanted him to. And I took aim and watched him go expire not 10 steps from where he was. So, you know, after that experience in 2018, I climbed down right away and notched my tag. And I called my dad, told him the whole story about what happened. And he goes, oh, man, that's awesome. He goes, send me some pictures. And he goes, I just thought about this. He goes, you need to put your business card somewhere inside that deer, whether it's in the ear, in the mouth, cut a hole in its under the rib and shove a business card in its rib. That way, if, while you're going to grab your truck, someone decides to take your deer, you got some kind of proof this time. And so I did that, called my neighbor. I said, hey, I shot a buck and I shot a doe. Just want to let you know. And he goes, oh, well, I'll walk over and I'll help you put them in the truck. So we did that. We got the buck and doe. I found the doe fairly quickly. She was only 40 yards from where I shot her. And that was my 2019 season. Cause I, like I said, my wife had some health issues and I didn't want to hunt that much.
Right. Right.
So then we fast forward to 2020 and this is where it kind of gets comical. So my next door neighbor and I made plans to go out on Saturday and I've kind of figured out his property. It's probably about October 10th. It's the Friday before. And, I decided, you know, my dad's friend's property where I got permission to hunt. I was going to go try just because I had the time. I really wanted to get in the woods and figure out some deer patterns. And, that property, I knew I had the potential to find a nice buck because it produced nice bucks before. And it's farmland, agricultural, with a couple 20-acre lots of woods. So they're concentrated. And I pick my tree, put my lone wolf up in the tree, and I'm climbing up. And I go to pull my bow up on the pull rope. I'm reaching down to grab it, and the clip on the pull rope snaps. I watch my bow fall all the way to the bottom of the tree. So I get back down. I grab my bow. Sights broke off.
Ugh.
I'm like, oh, man. So I call my archery shop where I bought my prime, and I said, hey, I know you close in about an hour and a half. It's going to take me 2 hours to get there. Is it okay if you stay open so that I can get a sight? I just need to get a sight so that I can go out in the morning because I promised my neighbor I was going out with them. So I go pick up a sight. It's a totally different sight. I got a single pin because that's what I wanted. And I should have got a multi-pin because that's what I was used to. So I get there and put the sight on. He levels it for me and everything. And I go out hunting with my neighbor the next day, probably about a week and a half later. I'm in my dad's friend's woods, the agricultural woods, and I climb up in this tree. I'm like, man, this is a nice spot. And I'm in the crook of two trees, 25 feet up. Probably there a half hour, here comes a button buck. And did I tell you I had to sight that bow in after picking that single pin sight in the dark?
And what, did you have to sight it in your like headlights or something?
Yeah, in the backyard and the headlights.
Dang.
It was one of those days.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't think I found your podcast yet at this point. But I'm sitting there in this tree, and half hour after I get in the tree, here comes a button buck, and he's just tooling around me. About an hour later, here comes two does. They come right behind me. I mean, the button buck, literally, I took a picture, sent it to my wife. I said, well, the deer like me because it's at the bottom of my stand. The does go 20 yards behind my stand. It's probably half hour before into shooting light, all of a sudden the woods just explode. And this is, let me think, 2020. It was probably October 25th.
All right. So things in the woods are starting to heat up.
Yeah. And I mean, this, 3 years ago, my dad's friend shot this buck. It was aged at about 4.5 years old. It wasn't wider than ears, but it was tall. And he was wearing a Santa Claus hat when he shot this buck. So we call it Santa Claus. And it looked just like, I mean, it was a mirror image of this buck. And this buck was so aggressive. I mean, he was chasing everything. A couple spikes, a small 2.5-year-old, chasing everything around. And I'm sitting here chasing him with my bow, trying to, when he stops, I want to get a shot. And I had this tree, I knew it was about 45 yards away. And I set my single pin because I knew he was going to stop right in it. And I released an arrow. I didn't have lighted nox at this point. Couldn't find the arrow. Couldn't find any blood later that night. So it was complete miss. When I got down to where I thought he was, I looked back up at the tree. He was about 20 yards after the tree. It just looked like he was in that opening.
Yeah.
So I should have, he stood there long enough. I should have ranged him.
Yeah.
And his head was behind a tree, but you know, rookie mistake.
Yeah. So at that point, you know, you miss a deer and a lot of people, their confidence, you know, the confident level kind of goes down. And, how did you recover from something like that?
I immediately went back in my backyard and I started shooting.
Yeah.
I got confident. I finally got a nice sight tape on my single pin sight. And I shot my first Robin Hood that week that I was shooting. So that was like, man, I'm doing something right. That Robin Hood was at 60 yards too. So it told me, you know, I'm doing something right. I was hitting softballs at 80 yards when I stepped back to 80. I was really dialing things in.
Yeah.
So then this is 2 days before opening a firearm, so like November 12th. I went back out to my dad's friend's property, the agricultural property, and there's a thicket on the backside of these woods, and it's a slow hill that goes back to the thicket. And the deer always funnel through that thicket. The thicket is someone else's property, though. So I sat back probably 10 yards off of this thicket. And there's this big tree that, it's two trees. I get up in the crook again with the climbing sticks. This one was, when I got up there, it was leaning back way more than it looked like from the ground. It was pretty funny sitting in it, and you're almost in a recliner on the platform. So this is my first encounter with deer sounds in the woods. I had, it's probably before daylight savings time, so it's probably about 7:15. I had a bunch of does come through, and they sat 20 yards from me, bedded down. Not 5 minutes later, you know, I'm using doe estrus at this time, and I have it.
You mean scent? You're yep. Using a whole bunch, like you. So what'd you do? Did you drag a drag rag into the woods with you, or did you spray it at the bottom of your tree, or how did you use that scent?
So I drug it all the way across the hay field with me, going into the woods, and drug it into the woods, hung it up in a tree, right on the property line, because the wind usually comes from the property line, blows into me, but all the deer funnel up through from the bottom usually.
Okay.
So after those does lay down, all of a sudden I hear the loudest grunt I've ever heard. I mean, it scared me almost. It was like, whoa, what the heck is that? And I just see antlers. And this really taught me in 2020 to identify bucks in the woods. So I didn't see anything but antlers. So I took a little bit of a risk with the doe sitting right there and them maybe winding me or seeing me do this. But I took a bleat call and I did a single bleat. And this buck hops out of the woods, runs across the hay field, because I'm almost in the corner of the thickets on the back. You have the hay field and then you have the woods. So I'm in that corner right there in the hay field. So I watched him run across the hay field and he hopped in the thicket. And I was like, oh, what the heck's going on? You know, he went from downwind to upwind now. Why is he doing that? And all of a sudden, I see his antlers finally appear through the woods, and I just see bigger antlers. And I was like, that's a big buck. So I'm sitting here waiting in this tree stand, anticipation's building. But you get to that point where your buck fever almost goes away.
Yeah.
Because you've been waiting so long.
Yep.
And the smaller buck, which by smaller, I thinking about it now, I think it's the buck that I shot this year. Because I had several encounters with him throughout this year and last year. Well, let me take that back. Last year, I had several encounters with him. I had one encounter with him this year.
Yeah.
So I see him filter through, and then I see this big buck. Definitely 3-4 inches on each side outside the ear. I'm guessing a 140 at least. And he comes at, and he's walking slow because those big old bucks don't walk fast. So he's coming slow. And in 2020, I told myself at the beginning of season, I'm not going to shoot a small buck. Because in 2018, I shot a small buck. And I said, I'm not going to do that again. So he makes a circle and circles in front of me. And he's at 36 yards. I ranged him. Well, you know, I said that I dropped my bow, put a new single pin sight on it, and I should have got a multi-pin. So this is the reason why. So I go to turn my single pin sight to 35 yards, and I spin the dial, I draw back, I shoot, and I had lighted Knox at this point that I had sighted in. And I watched the arrow go right below him. I mean, right below him.
And this was after you ranged him, correct?
After I ranged him.
Okay, so you ranged him, you got a range, and you adjusted your pin to get the range on the sight, and you missed low.
Well, and that's the tricky part. The sight that I got, the adjustment knob is not keyed to the shaft. So when you turn it and it's not loosened on the bottom, the lock's not loosened all the way, it just spins.
Okay.
So it's still set for 20 yards and it just went right below him.
Gotcha. So another example of gear not working or you not being comfortable with your gear.
Yep, and that's all because I dropped my bow 2.5 weeks before. You know, didn't read the instructions thoroughly, started shooting. The funny part is this buck let me shoot at him twice, and because he was in front of me, I didn't realize what was going on. I thought I ranged him again. I mean, just to make sure, I looked at my sight to make sure I was at the right yardage. I drew back. Shot on under him again. I mean, right under him. And I didn't realize till later when I was in the yard and I set my pin back to 20 yards. When I set it back to 20, I loosened up the knob and I was shooting high. I was like, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah.
And then I realized it wasn't keyed. And I was like, okay. So it wasn't me.
Yeah.
It was a sight.
Yeah.
And
so now you've been dealing with, it sounds to me like your strategy, the strategy that you're using to put yourself into place is working. Sounds to me like you really want to get a deer with your bow. You've had some gear issues that kind of plagued you. How did the rest of 2020 play out for you?
So it was, I had a couple encounters. I think this is about the time that I found your podcast, Nine Finger Chronicles. So it's probably Thanksgiving weekend. And my dad and I always go hunting Thanksgiving weekend. I'm sitting up in about the same tree, maybe a couple trees over, and I see tines 80 yards off in the thicket. And this buck is just, he's working those. He's got them locked down. He's not going to move with them. And he finally starts moving my way. And the wind turns a different direction. And it blows right to him. And I mean, I was looking at him when it did it. And I felt it on the back of my neck. And I just watched his head come up. And he just didn't hesitate. He just went. And I think I literally, for 4 hours, watched this buck move left and right before that. And I think that's the buck that I shot this year, because I had, all I saw was his head and antlers, and I studied it.
Yeah.
And he was a little smaller, a little skinnier, antler-wise, but he was a nice buck still last year.
Yeah. So you got busted. In the tree,
yep.
The wind shift, you got busted. This deer runs off. Any other close counters in 2020?
One last close encounter. And then, and this is where your podcast kind of pays off for anyone that listens, is you were talking about late season buck hunts. And you said, sometimes if you make a single grunt, that you get some deer movement started, I think is what you said. So I set up in the woods after no more buck encounters that year besides the last day of season. I mean, literally the last day of season. But I had doe encounters where I watched where the does filtered through the woods to a certain spot. Every single time at night, I watched them filter through the woods. So the last day of season, I said, I haven't got a deer this year. I want to get a deer, so I'll shoot a doe or a buck. So I'm going to set up on this doe trail. And I set up. And after you listen to your podcast, because it's a 3-hour drive to this property. So I listen to podcasts on the way home and on the way back. I did a single buck grunt. And all of a sudden, deer just start filtering through the woods. And here comes that buck. And the same one that I saw this year. And he's coming. But he goes 60 yards away. And I said, you know, bow hunting's all about the encounter. I kind of want that encounter closer than 60 yards. Yeah. With all the misses this year, I don't want to take a chance at 60 yards. Plus, it's in the woods. It's thick. It's not an open area. I really don't want to take a 60-yard shot. So I waited. And then the does that filter through every night, and he had a smaller 6-point with him and a spike. They were all with him. And they bedded down. Well, I have some does filter through, same time they did every night. And I picked the one that I wanted. And I said, I need to build up some confidence with the bow. Before I try anything, I need to build up some confidence. So I'm going to take one of these does. And 15-yard shot, chip shot, broadside, drew right back on her. I took the shot, and there was sleet on the ground because it was sleeting earlier that morning, but it was warm enough that it was melting. And my dad was on his way out. He hadn't even got out to the property yet. And I should mention, because this late in the season, it's archery only in Indiana. Right. They got away with the doe only season firearm. For Christmas, I paid to have my dad's old Bowtech that he loves shooting restrung. I had my local archery shop make some new strings for it. So this was his first time out in probably 10 years bow hunting. And he was tickled pink to get out. He started shooting. I mean, 2020, I really got into bow technology. And I started building my own arrows. I bought a bow press, all that kind of stuff. So I built him a set of arrows. He already had shot the fletching off of half his arrows. I mean, it just came right back to him. So he's like, I'm coming out with you. It's last day of season. Let's go have some fun. So I shot this doe. I sent him a picture. I said, well, you're a little late to the field because I already shot one. And I could see just the blood trail from where this doe ran, and I lost her in the thicket. And I mean, it just turned the sleet red. It was just red until I couldn't see anymore. And my dad goes, oh, anything else in the woods? I said, actually, there's 3 bucks. I said, the wind is heading towards where he has a blind in the fence row. I said, if you walk that fence row, or it's coming from that direction, rather, to the bucks in my favor. And I said, if you walk that fence row, it might wind bump the bucks towards my direction as a last stitch effort. I mean, it's the last day of the season. You got to try something. So he's probably 300 yards away from these bucks on the edge of the fence row. And he's walking slowly. And all of a sudden, the small 6-point pops up and beats it out of there. Busts everything else out of there, too. And that's the last I saw of this deer.
That's how your 2020 season ended then, right?
That's how it ended.
Okay. All right.
I mean, it was kind of anticlimactic because he didn't come my way, but, I had a final encounter with him and it was a little bit closer, and, you got to try something at that last hour.
Yep. Absolutely. That's a Hail Mary that we kind of have talked about in this series, and knowing when to start throwing Hail Marys and when to, you know, play maybe a little conservative. And that is definitely something that you have to learn throughout the years in order to, get consistent success, is knowing when to be aggressive and when to just kind of be conservative in your strategy approach. Now, moving into this season, did you have any hard goals in mind that you said to yourself, hey, it's time to shoot a buck with my bow. Like I need to get this done.
So, my goal for this season is I wanted a 3.5 year old or older buck. I didn't necessarily.
And at this point, I'm sorry to interrupt, but at this point, how many deer have you shot with a bow?
Just one.
Just one
at the end of 2020, that doe to gain my confidence.
Yep.
That was the only deer I've ever, that buck in 2018 that I suspect was stolen by that guy because, you know, it's just such a unique buck.
Yeah.
Those are the only two deer that I've ever know that I hit and tracked.
Yeah. Okay. So when you're starting to make up your mind, why were you deciding, you know, for your archery goal, you've only shot, let's just say, 2 deer successful. Why did you put, a certain goal of a 3-year-old buck or, you know, a 3.5-year-old buck as a goal when you've only shot 2 other deer with your bow?
Well, my dad's friend Chuck has a saying on his property, and he said, first time I ever hunted on this property, he said, I have one rule, don't shoot little bucks.
Okay.
That's his only rule for the property is don't shoot little bucks.
Gotcha.
So,
and because that's not your land, you have to live by the request of the landowner.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Yep. And it's because he knows it has potential for nice bucks.
Yeah.
He's taken several 130 inch plus bucks on this property.
Gotcha.
And by small buck, he doesn't mean, you know, if I shot a 2.5 year old, nice 8 point that had a nice rack, he probably wouldn't be too upset, especially if it was my first archery deer.
Right.
But it's just kind of his heart and fast rule. Don't shoot little bucks.
Yeah.
And in 2020, I kind of took a little bit different approach, or 2021 rather, took a little different approach. So I went out and bought some clearance game cameras. And in February, I went out and set trail cameras, set out some corn, put some salt blocks, put some mineral blocks, so I could get kind of an inventory of what made it through the season before their racks fell off. And I didn't have that big 140-inch plus buck on camera. We kind of think it got shot at the beginning of season. Because there was a guy that started hunting the thicket. He got permission and started hunting the thicket on the backside of the property, which was not ours. So we kind of think because he was hanging out right at the edge of the thicket. And we kind of think he might have taken that buck because that's where he was 3 days before the beginning of firearm season. So I got trail cameras out. The only nice buck I have on pictures, the one that I think I shot this year, and he already lost one antler at this point in time. I was like, man, some of them already lost the antlers.
Yeah.
So I pulled cards.
So you were making it a point to get out there and learn more about the deer herd by putting trail cameras up, whether that was for, you know, to locate bucks or locate does and see how they moved through the terrain, correct?
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to see what class of bucks we had in this property.
Yeah.
Just a definitive answer so I knew whether or not I was hunting the right class of deer.
Gotcha.
But in 2020, I really patterned how the deer moved through all those woods.
Gotcha.
I really had it down.
Okay.
Well, here we come June of 2021, and I'm coming out to the property to pull my trail cameras, and there's loggers.
Yeah, I've been there, man.
And I'm like, oh, man. And then I talked to my dad's friend, and he goes, yep, there's a house going up in the front left-hand corner of the woods. It's a family-owned property, but my dad's friend's brother runs the farm, and his daughter was building a house in the corner of the woods. So they logged it and then built her house. So I pulled cards in June, and I had a picture of my buck that I shot this year on those cards. So I knew he was there. They were out of there in 2 weeks. I mean, it's a small 20-acre section of woods, so they got out of there quick. But I didn't know how it was going to affect deer. And actually, this might not have been June. This might have been earlier because it was before turkey season. So it might have been March when they did this.
Okay. So the property is impacted by something completely out of the norm, right? They log it. They build a house. We have to fast forward just for time constraints on this episode now. So As the 2021 season has started, there's been an impact in some way, whether we call it pressure, let's just call it pressure, on a certain part of the farm. How did that pressure affect the deer movement on that property? Did it change it at all, or did it like change it enough where you had to make some moves?
Well, this is where I took your advice. You said don't ever make an observation sit, if you can make an observation sit where you can hunt. So I knew there was a trail right down the middle of the woods that they, a logging trail, and they usually came on the south side of the woods, and this is pretty much dead center in the woods, but there's that slight hill, so I sat on top of it because I knew, you know, something changed. So I kind of wanted to be in an area where I could shoot, but observe at the same time.
Gotcha.
So, you know, it's my first sit on the property because, you know, comical fails that happen with me. September 20th or so, I was shooting my bow and I went to draw it back, and I think my bow came with a string defect because I had multiple issues with my string. Long story short, my string broke and bent both cams. I didn't get my bow back until a week prior to this. So I had my bow sighted into 20 yards. But that's the story of my bow hunting career, is that there's always something that goes wrong right before season.
Yeah.
So I get up in the stand, this observation set where I could actually get in some of the action. Deer start flowing through, and there's treetops down everywhere. They're still green. And I'm nestled up in this oak tree. I have really good backdrop around me, and it's, I forget what date it is exactly. I think it's October 15th. It's right dead in the middle of the month. And I see these does coming through, and I kind of see tines behind them, and they're 100 yards off in the woods. And the funny story about this hunt, real short and sweet, I was just going to go pull trail cameras because we were camping at a campground that was 40 minutes away from this property instead of 3 hours. And I talked myself into actually hunting instead of pulling trail cameras. So I see these does, and I kind of see antlers 100 yards off, and I do a single doe bleat. You know, it's early in season, but sometimes bucks react weird to doe bleat. And this buck just starts pushing does around. I mean, he's pushing them around. Who's hot? Who's ready?
Yeah.
And he finally figures out none of those does are, and he walks on a string right to me. And this is kind of where... all the practice, I mean, I practiced almost every single day in 2021. I was out there shooting almost nonstop.
Yeah.
And it's a full frontal shot, almost, a little bit quartered. And I see him walking up to me, and he hops over this log. I knew the log was about 35 yards, just judging distance, and he takes a couple more steps where he's kind of clear from everything. I have to stand on my tippy toes to get over the brush that is my backdrop, draw back. He never knows that I'm there, and I've only got my 20 yard pen sighted in because I just got my bow back. And I put it right at the nodule on his chest where, I knew it was going to take out part of the heart, at least one lung, and go into the liver, just from looking at multiple, deer anatomy pictures and, shot calculators and stuff like that. I take the shot and he just takes off like a bat out of hell. I mean, you know, he's doing the death run, but it's so thick because they cut those treetops, I couldn't see him after 10 yards. So, I told myself, you know, I'm going to wait an hour just because I didn't see him go down. And, if we're coming up too close on time constraint, just let me know and we can cut it a little quicker. But 45 minutes into that hour, I see these does funneling over to me. And I'm like, man, that tree's 10 yards. If the big doe comes right in between those trees, it's going to be hard to pass up a shot.
They fall in your lap, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just kind of, you know, one after another. Well, she steps right in that window. I draw back and I'm kind of looking and I'm like, oh, I haven't recovered the buck, and get in my anchor, and you know, I'm kind of squeezing, kind of hesitant, and I took the shot and watched her trot off. Arrow stuck probably 18 inches into her. There was probably 10 inches that wasn't in her. Heard a loud swack as I hit her scapula. And I was like, okay, well, now I don't have just one deer I got to look for. I got two. So I called my brother who works nights, and I said, hey, come out to Chuck's property. I think I got two deer down. I'm not sure, but you know, that's what I think. I'm pretty confident. I said, I'm going to start looking for the buck here in about 15, 20 minutes, just because they ran completely opposite directions. I knew I wasn't going to bump the doe if it wasn't a good shot, if I looked for the buck. It was about a 45 minute wait for him to get out there. And, I started looking at the blood trail in the buck, and because it was a frontal shot, you know, the arrow didn't go all the way through him. It's a slow blood trail at first. And it gradually starts getting a little bit better, a little bit better. And I come out to the south logging trail, and I kind of ran out of blood 10 yards before it. And I'm kind of circling, looking for a little more blood. And I look up and I just see his rack. I'm like, oh, thank God. You know, it's done. I got my archery buck. I got the deer that I've had multiple encounters with over the past year and a half. And it's finally a chapter to close.
Yeah. So I'm fast forwarding here for you, and yep. you eventually you got the doe, right?
Yep.
But how did it feel, you know, for you once you were able to, you know, bend over and pick that buck up for the first time?
Oh, it was, it's a feeling that, like I told my brother, I said, when you have those in close encounters, it's a feeling like no other. I mean, it's, you're part of the woods. And it just, it really makes you grateful for, all the opportunities. Yeah. It was amazing. He came and I said, well, let's get some pictures with this buck real quick, and look for the doe. And then of course we found her and took pictures with both, but it was a real special experience. And it was nice to have my brother there. It kind of ignited his spark for archery, because he was kind of like, why archery? Because you can't, I mean, he's rifle hunted his whole life. It took him until a couple of years ago to get his buck.
Yeah.
At all, because we lost our property from when I was a kid. But it really ignited a spark in him, because he saw how happy I was getting my buck.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. And the cool part about this whole story is you had to go through a whole bunch of trials and tribulations. Some of them were bad luck. Some of them were failure on your part. But, you know, and it took 3 years for you to be, you know, what you would determine, or I'm not going to say successful, because I think if even on years where you don't fill a tag, you can still have a successful hunting season. But this year, it sounds like you were able to check some boxes and accomplish what you ultimately set out to do. And that was, put an archery buck on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would wholeheartedly agree with you. Even though I didn't take a buck in my 2020 season, all those encounters, it was still a fulfilled season. It teaches you a lot of lessons.
Amen. Amen. Well, Joe, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on the podcast and share this experience with us. I know a lot of people out there who are new to bow hunting or novices, you know, relatively new, can benefit from your story here. So thank you very much for your time. And again, congratulations.
Thank you, Dad.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to find out more information and utilize additional resources, visit deerassociation.com/hunting101. There you will find links to the YouTube series, Guide to Successful Deer Hunting ebook, new hunter sign-up sheets, and Deer Hunting 101 courses. Additionally, you can listen to more outdoor-themed podcasts at sportsmansnation.com, on iTunes, or anywhere you download your podcasts. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.